we're going to look at something in the book of Revelation. You know, when you say you're going to have a Bible study on the book of Revelation, most people ear perks up. Three of the two witnesses raised their hand from the audience. All sorts of things that people think about, and they're very intrigued about it. It's something everybody likes to listen to. It's something everybody likes to interpret. It's something that everybody likes to tell God what he ought to do. And that's what people do with the Bible. But today we're going to just look at one chapter of the book of Revelation, and that's chapter 10. Now, I've read a lot of books and pamphlets about the book of Revelation, Key to the Book of Revelation, many, many books, and I've heard a lot of sermons, and all those things had one unique common similarity. They left chapter 10 out most of the time. Now, I wonder why. Chapter 10 is before the two witnesses, and then after the two witnesses in the 11th chapter, it deals with actually going back to the rebellion of Lucifer of Revelation 12. But let's just look at chapter 10, see if it tells us anything. And what it tells, because it does tell us something, what it tells us is what we don't want to hear. So we ignore it. People ignore it. And we'll just start in the 10th chapter in verse 1. And I saw still another mighty angel coming down from heaven, clothed with a cloud, and a rainbow was on his head. His face was like the sun, and his feet like pillars of fire. And he had a little open book in his hand. And he sat at his right hand with his right foot on the sea and his left foot on the land. And he cried in a loud voice as when a lion roars. And when he cried, seven thunders uttered their voice. Now, when the seven thunders had uttered their voice, I was about to write. But I heard a voice from heaven saying to me, seal up the thing which the seven thunders uttered, and do not write it down. So already we see that Revelation 10 is telling you that God is telling us that something's going to happen, and I'm not telling you what now. And, you know, Ezekiel also dealt with this little book, and I've heard a lot of explanations about it, and I think they're logical in most cases. I was about to write, and I heard a voice from heaven saying, seal up the things which the seven thunders uttered, and do not write them. And the angel whom I saw standing on the sea and land lifted up his hand to heaven, and swore by him who lives forever ever, who created heaven and things that are in it, in the earth and the things that are in it, and in the sea and the things that are in it, that there should be delay no longer. So these events, if we'll just look at the context and look at what it says, are going to be the beginning sign when whatever it is that these seven thunders do, who are they, what are they, didn't tell us. But in the days of the sounding of the seventh angel, when he is about to sound, the mystery of God should be finished, as he declared to his servants the prophet. Then the voice which I heard from heaven spoke to me again, saying, take the little book which is open in the hand of the angel who stands on the sea and the earth. And I went to the angel and said, give me the little book. And he said to me, take it and eat it. It will make your stomach bitter, but it will be sweet as honey in your mouth. And that's generally the way, and this is just an aside, this doesn't prove anything, but that's generally the way the people look at the book of Revelation. It's sweet as honey. It's exciting. It's intriguing. But if you had to live it, it wouldn't be that way. It's sour on your stomach. And I took the little book out of the angel's hand and ate it. And it was sweet as honey in my mouth. And when I had eaten it, my stomach became bitter. And he said to me, "You must prophesy again about many peoples, nations, tongues, and kings." He said, "Your job's not done." And of course, John did that. Then chapter 11, and we'll look at it in just a moment because it deals with the two witnesses. Like I said, I've met some people that claim to be the two witnesses from time to time. My job. It's amazing what the human mind will do to itself. It's amazing. And I was given a reed like the measuring rod, and the angel stood, saying, "Rise and measure the temple of God, the altar, and those that worship therein, but leave out the court which is outside the temple, and measure it not, for it shall be given to the Gentiles, and they shall tread it under the holy city underfoot 42 months. And I will give my power to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy 1,260 days, clothed in sackcloth." These are the two olive trees and the two lampstands that stand before the God of the earth. And actually, this goes back to the book of Zechariah, where it talks about them there. "If anyone wants to harm them, fire proceeds from their mouth and devours their enemies. And if anyone wants to harm them, he must be killed in like manner." This is sort of the work of Elijah here. It's the same, not necessarily that this is the work of Elijah, but it's the same powers that Elijah basically used. "These have power to shut the heavens, that no rain fall in the days of their prophecy. And they have the power over waters to turn them to blood and to strike the earth with all plagues as often as desire." So, you know, it goes back to the same thing that happened in Egypt. "And when they finish their testimony, the beast who ascended out of the bottomless pit will make war against them, overcome them and kill them, and their dead bodies will lay in the streets of the great city, which spiritually is called Sodom and Egypt, where our Lord was executed." So, you know, Jerusalem is a neat spot on the face of the earth because God chose it and because what it will be in the future. I've been there. And I'll quote Mel Brooks on this. It's a rat hole today. It is. It's not a beautiful city. It's an ugly city. Part of the modern part of Jerusalem is pretty nice. But the old city, I wouldn't want to live there. I wouldn't want to spend the night there. Not in the old city. I know there'll be somebody that'll accuse me of blasphemy. But I've been to Jerusalem. I've walked over a good part of it, well, most of it. I know what I saw, and I don't believe in lying. Verse 8, "And their dead bodies will lie in the street of the great city, which is spiritually is called Sodom and Egypt, where also the Lord was executed. And those from the people, tribes, and tongues, and nations will see their bodies there in 3.5 days, and will not allow their dead bodies to be put into graves. And all those who dwell on the earth will rejoice over them, making merry and sending gifts to one another, because the two prophets tormented those who dwell on the earth." Now, here is a good example, and I just want to cover this, of the way God does things. The way we do things is different way human being does that. And also there's something that this tells us, that we've probably still got satellite service around the Earth, because everybody in the world wants them. That's just an assumption. Now, after 3.5 days, the breath of life from God entered them, and they stood on their feet, and great fear fell on those about. The ultimate slap in the face. Mm-hmm. You think you've got them, you think you've won, you just lost big time. You didn't lose the battle, you lost the war. I'm not going to go any further there today. I just want to go back and reiterate what we covered that's important. That Revelation 10 should not be left out of the Bible. It should not be ignored, because what Revelation 10 tells us is a tremendous message. That the event that kicks it all off, you don't know what it is. You don't know what it is. That's a powerful statement. And human beings have to be pretty dumb to ignore it. This has been James Throgmorton speaking to you for the Church of God.